We are up to pick number 11 in the Amateur Hour podcast mock draft. I'm Brian Gibberman here with Sam Vicini, joined by Ian Levy. Is it Levy, right? I didn't ask you that. Okay, I wasn't Levy, Levy, I don't know. It could be many options there, or really only two. But all right, I'm actually kind of mad at you that you wouldn't trade me George Hill in our mock draft we're doing, in our other mock draft. I don't know, I might have to we might have to kick you off the podcast now that I think of it.
It's a challenge when you get into it. So we do this big HP mock draft and everybody represents a team. There's definitely like the instinct. Things are flying around, trade proposals, and you definitely, it's like a video game. You want to trade just to trade, you know. It's no fun to just sort of sit there and keep a static roster and, you know, pick at number 11. But, yeah, we couldn't work anything out.
What makes it fun is it's basically 30 people that are just extremely nerdy about basketball and take it way too seriously.
Yeah.
So, I'm happy I didn't not get involved in this.
Yeah.
It's a time suck.
Oh, yes. I might have hit 700 emails off of it in the last 3 days.
Oh, yeah.
That's not any sort of exaggeration either. Like, that's a legitimate 700 emails.
Yeah, between, like, the hardwood proxies and thread we have, like, regularly, and then all the CBS emails I get, all of the other emails I get, I would just hate all of you. So
it's pretty tremendous.
Yeah.
All right, Pace. Yeah. Ian, what do you think about this whole? I mean, it sounds pretty. I mean, the Pacers are making pretty it obvious that they want to change their style of play to a more fast-paced, offensive-minded system this upcoming season. Do you agree with that direction or disagree with that direction?
I mean, it's kind of hard because it's obvious that pushing offense necessitates a less of a focus on defense, and most of that's because, you know, Hibbert is kind of their defensive anchor, and he's such a disaster on offense however they change their priorities, it's inevitably going to impact the other. The thing that's weird to me is, like, they're talking about a pretty dramatic shift, and it feels like they, like, have not, they've not experimented or dabbled at all with this over the past couple of years. It's not like this is something we've tried in small doses that we want to see more of. It's like, we're watching other teams play and we want to try that. We've never actually done it ourselves, but, you know, it looks good when we see it on tape, and so we want to try it out.
Do you think it's smart to, I mean, they're kind of like, it sounds like they're trying to force Hibbert to opt out of his contract or not pick up his option. I'm not sure the exact wording on what his is.
Yeah.
I know he's flawed offensively, but if used the right way, he is still an extremely valuable player in this league. And I don't know if it's you can't find a guy that can give you 25 minutes of elite defense and build around that. That's a hard thing to find, and I don't know if I agree with how they're handling him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bummer from, like, a personnel perspective too, or a personal perspective, just because Hibbert's been a great guy. He's been a team player. He's done everything they've asked. He's worked hard. He's been great in the community. Like, it's hard watching the organization sort of intentionally alienate him from a bottom line perspective. I mean, I sort of understand it. Like, it makes their life easier perhaps if he opts out, but it kind of sucks because he's for whatever Paul George has been their best player the past couple of years, Hibbert's sort of been the face of the team the past couple of years, and so it's hard to sort of watch them push him aside. But I think, honestly, I think David West is sort of more of a problem than Hibbert, or at least that they could make this work if they kept Hibbert and moved West. And I think the issue with West is that he's a little bit stretchy. He's a good jump shooter, but his range doesn't go out to the 3-point line. And I think there are some scenarios where they could make an offensive work with Hibbert on the floor if they had a four who could shoot 3-pointers, and West's range just doesn't go that far.
And he's another guy. He has about a slightly under $13 million player option that he could pick up or decide to decline. Has there been any inclination, any reports on which way he's leaning towards going with that?
I haven't heard anything specific about him. To me, I would be surprised if either player walked away. I mean, they're both going to be unrestricted next year anyway, so it's not like they're going to miss the big cap jump for a new contract. And I don't think... honestly, like, Hibbert's stock, it seems like it would be lower now. It seems like it might be worth it for him to give it another go with the Pacers and see if they can make it work. But, yeah, I would guess that both guys would pick up their option.
Yeah, you know, David West's in kind of a weird circumstance because he's 34, going to be 35 in August. You would think that he could possibly get a multi-year deal, maybe a 2 to 3 year contract, maybe at 20 to 25 million, depending on how many years it goes for. Would that be worth it to him to opt out this year and try and get the larger payday when you're only 35, as opposed to opting out at 36 and maybe only getting 1 year offers if you have a rougher year?
Mm-hmm.
He's in kind of a tough spot. I wouldn't be totally surprised if he ended up opting out, I guess.
No, I guess I wouldn't either. I think, I mean, some of it is the perspective of, again, thinking about his personality, or at least what I know about his personality from watching games and reading about him in post-game interviews, because I've never met him. But, you know, I have this perspective on him as a sort of a committed team guy, and it's not like he's a mercenary who's been traded and he's played for seven different teams. You know, he played for the Hornets and he's been a Pacer for the past couple of years, and that's it. And he, you know, everything that he's said over the past couple of years is that he's committed to this system and he's sort of made this team his new home. And I don't know, I guess I feel like he's kind of a guy who would ride it out, but again, I don't have any inside information, and yeah, I guess with both players, you know, if they opted out, it wouldn't shock me.
So
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Hibbert, I think I would be more surprised if he opted out, because I think he's going to struggle to find a $12 million a year offer right now on the market. So if he takes this $15 million, banks it, has a decent year, you would think that he can probably get back up to that level next year. But right now, I mean, what team out there is going to offer him $12 million a year?
Hi, guys.
Yeah. I don't think the Knicks would be that stupid.
Why is it stupid?
To offer him $12 million a year? Because you can't play offense.
That's fine. I'll play Melo at the four, have him be my five, and just have everyone else be able to play offense and have him anchor your defense, especially if they go guard or wing in the draft and they need a center. I'll hand him the two-year, $24 million contract in a second.
Right, but do you think that – I guess my point is that I don't think that Phil Jackson would do that.
I'm trying to read into Phil Jackson's mind. I'm going to avoid
trying to do
that.
Well, it seems like Phil Jackson's placing a heavy emphasis on fitting in the triangle, and there's no real circumstance.
Not a Knicks podcast, blah, 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 blah. All right, let's move that. We can move along from this. I'm sorry I brought that up.
No, but here's the thing, though. Finding a legitimate suitor for Hibbert is kind of an important thing for the Pacers going forward, because it doesn't seem like he's happy there. Am I right, Ian?
I mean, I think I think he was unhappy playing with Lance Stephenson. I think that was a big part of it. To be honest, it seemed like the whole team was unhappy playing with Lance Stephenson by the time that had run its course. And it seemed like he had a little bounce in his step coming into this season, and they struggled out of the gate, and he sort of didn't do what was expected on offense, and you know, having Lance gone didn't sort of make things easier for him in the way that maybe he or the team thought. And I don't think anybody on the Pacers team was really having fun last year.
Right.
Yeah, so here's my point, though. Like, A, if he's not happy there for whatever reason, and B, if they want to go up-tempo, I don't know why he would be there past next year.
No, and I don't think, I mean... barring some sort of miracle next year where all the pieces fall into place and all of a sudden they play this new style and are sort of right back where they were as a contender in the Eastern Conference, you know, barring that scenario, I don't think the Pacers are re-signing him. And so, Yeah, maybe this is his chance to sort of make some choices about where he'd like to be.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe it's a circumstance where he opts in with the knowledge that the team might try and trade him, that he's a really difficult contract to move because $15 million is difficult to match.
Yeah.
It's just a very strange situation for where the Pacers are, and West to a lesser extent is the same way. I do think that West could play in a kind of up-tempo offense a little bit easier than Hibbert could. The problem with West is, though, that I think the idea would be to try to play Paul George a little bit more at the small ball four, and West would be blocking that because he can't really play the five.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that makes it hard. And I think, I mean, again, going back to this thing about that the Pacers haven't experimented with this at all, like, Paul George really has not played small ball four at all. It's just not – the Pacers just have never, the past 3 years, they have never really played lineups without two bigs on the floor. I think that's the hopefully the future of the team. And again, like, I think they can make that work for 25 minutes a night if Hibbert's the five and he's just floating along the baseline and offensive rebounding and, you know, sort of slipping in for backdoor cuts. You know, I think that's workable for 20 or 25 minutes a night, but they have to get a four who can shoot three-pointers. You know, they can't have West or somebody else sort of floating around the elbows because there's just not enough space between the two of them.
Which brings us to the draft, because outside of being able to dump Hibbert or West for basically nothing and not bring any cap money back, they're going to have to improve through the draft. Is there probably going to be over the salary cap? I mean, right now, inclusive total, according to basketballinsiders.com, is $69 million. The cap is going to be $67 million. So using whatever exceptions they have, I mean, you're not really going to be able to get any sort of shooting big man, you wouldn't think. I mean, you saw what Channing Frye got last year, so any one of that would seem to look like it would be out of their price range. So
Bird already said that he wanted to bring Scola and Rodney Stuckey back. Maybe that was just blowing smoke, but you know, if that's true, that's, you know, it's the draft and that's it.
Yeah. So they could use another ball creating guard. They could use a big that could shoot. There's a real lot of places they could go with this pick. Who are you putting in the mix?
When we talked about this and I sort of looked at in the mock draft category, I looked at the people who had been picked ahead in the mock. I think Frank Kaminsky from Wisconsin is probably the one who makes the most sense for them. I think, you know, it's nice that he's a big and it's nice that he can shoot, but I feel like what they need more than anything else is sort of offensive skill and some sort of versatility and flexibility. They have some skilled offensive players, but the way they fit together, it's just ISOs and high pick and rolls and spot up shooters, and that's all there is. There's no counters, there's no plan B, there's no sort of like, oh, if we do this, we can exploit this kind of matchup. It is what it is, and they're just banging their head against the wall. So I think getting a guy like that who's big, who can shoot, who can pass, you know, who can play at the elbows, who can play in the low post, who can play behind the three-point line, I think that sort of opens up all sorts of possibilities for them. It also opens them up to all sorts of jokes about Indiana and white players, but, you know, I think it's worth the risk here.
First off, I'd just like to point out that on the side of my screen on basketballinsiders.com, there's a nice ad playing for Jupiter Ascending. Have either of you guys seen that movie?
No.
It's fully worth going to see it because it's one of the funniest damn things you will see all year.
Who's in it? I don't even know.
Channing Tatum, Mila Kunis, and Eddie Redmayne. And Eddie Redmayne just gives the performance of a lifetime in this one. Like, he's playing...
That's saying a lot, because didn't he win the Oscar this year?
Yes, he's playing what's supposed to be like a sinister bad guy. And what happens is, he's so skinny and he's like so small that he has this like, no, he has no presence about him whatsoever. And he's trying to be intimidating and you just can't help but laugh at him whenever he speaks in this dark, stilted, terrible voice.
So you're telling me I should see this instead of Entourage?
Yes. I bet you will laugh more at this than you will at the Entourage movie.
You are giving my intelligence a lot of credit here that probably isn't deserved.
That's a fair point. But regardless, this movie is one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life, and it's just incredible because of it. Anyway, back to the Pacers. I agree with Ian because I like the idea of Kaminsky for the Pacers because, like he said, like they don't really have a way to counteract defensive or what teams do to them defensively. With Kaminsky, he can kind of do a lot of different things. He's a very good jump shooter from the three-point line. He shot something like 42% this year. But that's not even the best part of his game. The best part of his game is the ability to attack closeouts. And he can really, really pass the ball off of attacking closeouts, or he has a nice touch in the mid-range to make shots after attacking said closeouts. So he can kind of do a lot of different things, and he'd give them a really high offensive skill level that could play with both David West and Roy Hibbert this year. So I'm kind of in on that pick, actually, for Ian.
Do you guys think that Kaminsky is someone who could play the five with George at the four? Is that something that could work on both ends of the court? I think offensively, very clearly, it could. So it's more of a question of can it work defensively?
So for me, that would be, under most coaches, an absolute disaster. But I think that Frank Vogel's kind of bought up enough goodwill with his defensive schemes that they're really good at cutting off penetration with Paul George, with George Hill, guys of that ilk, that I think that they could probably make it work from that side for small spaces of time. But I also think that you could probably do something with just playing Paul George as a three and then David West as a four and Kaminsky as a five.
Yeah, I think there's some fives that West can defend. And I think the other thing to keep in mind is not to heap too much credit onto Frank Vogel, but thinking about like where Roy Hibbert was 4 or 5 years ago, like he was not a he's not a dominating shot blocker, and he wasn't in college either. And you know, he's not this—he's not a guy who sort of had this like natural raw athleticism that sort of timing and skill and repetition sort of made him into a defensive beast. Like he's a product of like coaching and scheme and just the experience of being in the right place at the right time and having the right pieces around him. Not to take anything away from him because he's incredibly good at it and one of the best in the league. But when you look at Hibbert, like the asset that he brings to the table that he came to the team with is his size, and everything else has sort of been collaborative and hard work and coaching and practice and whatever. And not that Frank Vogel is going to turn Kaminsky into, you know, one of the best rim defenders in the league, but I think there's every reason to think that his coaching and this system and the players around them, and especially the experience of like Paul George and George Hill on the wings, can make a questionable defender much more effective than maybe they would look at first pass.
After what Vogel did with that team last year, I think you could heap as much praise on him as you would like.
Yeah, I mean, their defense was functional when Tyler Hansbrough played the four for them, so.
Yeah, no, I generally agree with Ian. I think that you could play him next to Hibbert, next to West. You could find a lot of different uses for Kaminsky. The other guy that I would pitch is Bobby Portis, because why wouldn't I pitch Bobby Portis? Because I pitch him in every podcast. I think he's another guy that could play with both Hibbert and West for this year. He's the exact kind of guy that David West, if you were ever going to get him to try and mentor someone, he's the exact kind of guy that I think David West would enjoy mentoring, because he's that same kind of loyal to a fault, like really gives a damn, really, really is going to come in with a chip on his shoulder like West did, and really just get after it. And I think that West would enjoy playing with him. And he has some of the same skills that Kaminsky does. He can shoot the ball. He's not as good at putting it on the deck, though. He wouldn't really give them another creativity kind of option for offensive or schemes that defenses would show them when they have the ball. So he's just profiles as a better defender, though. I just trust him that I think he's going to be a very good NBA player. But Kaminsky probably does have a little bit more offensive upside. And if that's what you're looking for with the Pacers, I think that that might be the right pick.
What do you think about Stanley Johnson if he was hypothetically still there?
Johnson's interesting because you could do a lot of different things with him and Paul George at the 3-4. Mm-hmm. They kind of also do a lot of the same things, though. They're both good at attacking closeouts, but Johnson doesn't really like to shoot a ton of threes. He's more of a guy that's going to pump fake you, get into the lane and maybe take a mid-range shot, shoot off the dribble a little bit more. That'd be interesting. I haven't really thought of that, though, because I don't think that Johnson's going to fall to 11. But if he did, that's an interesting fit because he's also another guy that's very good at cutting off penetration defensively. Or at least he profiles at it when he gives a damn on defense.
Yeah. Because I guess, like, so thinking about the Pacers plan next year and how much stock you put in, you know, what Bird and Vogel said about playing up-tempo, I sort of see it as playing up-tempo is one solution to a problem that they had. And so Kaminsky presents a different solution. He's not necessarily going to change their tempo, but he's going to, you know, alleviate some offensive pressure on them in the half court. But, you know, if they're serious about sort of really doubling down on athleticism and pushing the ball and swarming defense, just Johnson was somebody who jumped out to me. Even though, yeah, he's similar to Paul George, you know, if they want to make that plan happen sort of the way they laid it out in those quotes at the end of the year, then it might be, you know, doubling up on things that they already have and making that more of their identity.
With talking about them trying to push the pace and the size that George Hill has at the point guard position, they could do some 2-point guard lineups and look at some of these. None of the point guards have been taken yet, and we're getting into that range where you could kind of go in that direction. Like someone like Jerry and Grant would, with his size and athleticism, you could pair him with George Hill, and that would be a vehicle to push the tempo for them and have another guy who could run a ton of pick and rolls. And with big, I don't know how Grant was spot up shooting, but George Hill, I'm pretty confident George Hill was probably a pretty good spot up shooter that could be a backcourt combination that would make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's really interesting because I think it will be telling watching what they do in the backcourt next year and how they handle Hill. You know, because for the first couple of years, they just kind of pushed him to the side. And, you know, they sort of took what he was in San Antonio and this sort of slashing supporting scorer who could play a little point and could initiate the offense. And they were like, all right, we want you to be the floor general and, you know, just kind of hang out in the corners and, you know, maybe run a little high pick and roll here and there. But, you know, don't try and do too much. Just get the ball to everybody else. And you know, having him freed up to sort of play a fuller offensive game last year, he was phenomenal. And so it'll be interesting to watch if they – sort of, you know, if they try and replicate what he did this past year, or if they try and sort of shunt him back to what he was before. And because it's this thing where he can sort of be successful in both places. And so, you know, deciding what's more valuable to them. But Jerian Grant's a guy that I liked a lot too. I ended up, for whatever reason, watching a lot of Notre Dame games this year. And he was a guy that I really liked. And I think he'd make an interesting backcourt with Hill, especially defensively.
Yeah, he's a guy that if they wanted to go more up-tempo, if they wanted to go more spread pick and roll, he'd be the perfect guy to take here, I think, because you could play both him and Hill together. Both of them have some pretty good defensive versatility to defend differing guards. So that's at least intriguing to me. I just don't know that I buy necessarily that they're more looking toward that spread pick and roll type of offense, though.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is they, at least on the record, Larry Bird said they want to re-sign Rodney Stuckey. So
that's terrifying.
Yeah, but I think Grant makes less sense if they do re-sign Stuckey.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing here that I think is interesting from Bird's perspective is that he said that he wants a guy that can come in and play immediately too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rookies are not necessarily guys that are going to come in and make a big impact always. But there are a few guys here. I think that Grant is one of them that, you know, he's 22 years old. He could make an impact right away. I think Kaminsky's 22. He's going to make an impact right away. Bobby Portis is 20, but he has the kind of mindset where I think that by January he'll be able to make an impact. The guys who I don't really see as a fit for them, though, because of that statement, I would say that would be Miles Turner. I would say that would be Trey Lyles. Both of those guys, I think, are going to be coming along a little bit slower just because their bodies need a little bit of work, or they're just not necessarily ready to defend, or in Turner's case, his numbers against lower levels of competition were a lot better this year than his numbers against higher level competition in the Big 12. I would say that they're looking for a specific type of player. They're looking for either a forward that can, you know, possibly shoot the ball and get up and down, or they're looking for a kind of guard that can provide some offensive versatility, like a Cameron Payne or like a Jaren Grant.
I'm going to throw one more idea out there that's also thinking outside the box, especially if they want to play George as a small ball four. What about someone like Ronde Hollis Jefferson and just creating an absolutely devastating combination of defenders that you could have switch and do a lot of the stuff the Warriors do on the wing? I know his offense is lacking, but maybe you develop some cuts and try and find ways to get around the spacing issues it would present. That could be a lot of fun, having someone like him and Paul George out there together guarding other opponents' top wings.
It'd be a lot of fun for me, but again, we're talking about, I think this team needs more offensive versatility as opposed to defensive versatility. I think they have enough on that end to where they'll be okay, especially on the wing. I mean, CJ Miles isn't the greatest defender, but he's a smart team defender at least. I think that he'd be okay on the wing. They have Solomon Hill, too. Solomon Hill, he looked pretty good in some, wasn't even necessarily limited minutes by the end of the year. I mean, he was playing a pretty decent amount of time. I think he ended up with like 26, 27 minutes a game for like the full season. But he looked pretty good, a pretty decent amount of the time, especially on defense. So I would be surprised if they went that way, I guess. But I mean, it wouldn't be the worst idea. I think that Ronde, again, is going to be a plug-and-play kind of guy, especially on the defensive end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really think shooting and offensive skill has to be the key. Yeah. Back to that initial point, they're just so limited and they have so few options, so few reasonable options on offense. It makes them so easy to defend, and they just constantly feel like they're swimming upstream. Mm-hmm. If they're not getting somebody to alleviate some of that pressure, whether it's half court skill like Kaminsky or somebody who's going to really help them sort of explode, you know, full court and play up tempo, like maybe Grant or something like that, then you know, I think they're probably heading in the wrong direction.
Sure, yeah. You guys make very logical points, and I will stand back.
I have a pretty good question. Why were Solomon Hill's defensive on-off numbers so bad last year?
Well, I think he played so many minutes at the beginning of the season when they were, you know, sort of not as good. I think he looked good. I think he's, I don't think he's a long-term piece for them. I don't, you know, he shot like 40% for the season. He's not a three-point shooter. I think he's sort of a nice scrapper energy guy, but I'm skeptical that he's sort of a long-term answer for anything on the wing.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's much more than like a seventh man on the wing that can provide energy and some defensive versatility just because of his size. But, you know, that has some value, especially to this team. And if you're considering a guy like Ronde Hollis Jefferson, I don't know that I would go that route because of him.
Yeah,
you know, it's going to be interesting to see which way they go, just because I have no idea what Brian's talking about, by the way.
Something happened in the HP mock draft.
No, but I'm watching the game at the same time. And yeah, we're taping this during the NBA Finals. I'm really proud of the level of attention I've been able to pay to both. I haven't missed a thing in either.
I had to go in the back bedroom just to make sure I could pay attention.
I've been multitasking excellently over here.
I'm impressed. Between Jupiter Ascending, the NBA Finals, and everything that we've talked about with the Pacers, none of us have missed a beat. We're just on it today. If anything, I've been the most distracted.
This is why they pay us all the big bucks. Which, what I mean is we don't get paid big bucks at all. But
a little bit terrifying.
Yeah. All right. So do we have anything else we need to hit on, or do we want Ian to make the pick?
I think Ian should make the pick at this point.
All right. Kaminsky it is.
All right. We have Frank Kaminsky off the board. So we got one Wisconsin player left here still. Sam Decker still hasn't gone. Ian, dude, plug away. I know you run like 80 million things. Why don't you can let people know where to go and find stuff.
We do great work at Hardwood Paroxysm. We have 1,000 wonderful writers of all, whatever you're into, somebody writes about it at Hardwood Paroxysm and does a great job with it. All the stats stuff is at Nylon Calculus and a bunch of great statsy guys there, and you can find me bouncing back and forth both places.
All right, so make sure you guys check all that stuff out. Ian wasn't lying to you. It's all very good. That wraps up another edition of the Amateur Hour Mock Draft Podcast.